And then the citizens suffer as a result. And there's dissatisfaction amongst the citizens. So we don't want a leader to be partial. And it appeared that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was partial to the demigods. So thus this question came from Maharaj Parikshit. And thus the title of this chapter is Establishing the Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone. So in the course of answering this question, Sukadeva Goswami referred to King Yudhisthira and the Rajasuya sacrifice and the pastime when Sishupal is beheaded by the Supreme Lord. And as we know, in front of everyone, the soul merged into the body, Sishupal's soul merged into the body of Krishna. And then it was explained that these two cousins of Maharaj Yudhisthira, Sishupal and Dantavakra, were formerly residents of Vaikuntha. And here they are as terrible, terrible demons. And so now Maharaj Yudhisthira is expressing his inquiry, his doubt, about what kind of great curse could affect the liberated Vishnu Bhaktas. And why would somebody want to curse such liberated Vishnu Bhaktas? And how is it possible that a liberated devotee of the Lord would come again to this material world? This is a great, great quandary that also Srila Prabhupada's followers have discussed at length and with some degree of confusion and lack of conclusion. So we're treading on thin ice, but we will tread nonetheless. So here in this paragraph that I read, the first paragraph, Prabhupada writes, Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired from Narada Muni, saying, Etad akyatam arhasi. Only you can explain the reason. From authoritative sources, it can be discerned that associates of Lord Vishnu who descend from Vaikuntha do not actually fall. So the significance here is that Yudhisthira is approaching an authority. Prabhupada says an ordinary person would have great difficulty in answering this question. So therefore, he approaches Narada Muni. So we're very fortunate that we can approach Srila Prabhupada for the answer to this question. And there are more than one answers, as we discussed yesterday. It is a paradox, so it's an apparent contradiction, which can lead to a higher truth. So in Prabhupada, we're fortunate that Prabhupada left not only so many volumes of books, and not only so many hundreds and hundreds of lectures, but also wonderful conversations that he had with his followers and with guests. And one such conversation with a personality called Dr. Mize, M-I-Z-E, Dr. Mize, who met Prabhupada in his rooms in Los Angeles in the spring of 1975. And this conversation is in the folio. And also, by the grace of Krishna, my good husband, who just arrived this morning from America, Yadavara Prabhu, we were present and we filmed this conversation. Not all of it, but a good portion of it. And Dr. Mize asked Prabhupada, why does the soul fall from the spiritual world? Very relevant to our discussion. And Prabhupada explained that it is the soul's independence. And he gave an analogy. He said, just like this finger is mechanical part, like machine. It'll do what I want, given that I'm healthy. It'll do whatever I instruct it to do, mechanical. But the soul is not mechanical. The soul is a living entity, which means that the soul has this minute bit of freedom. We're part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna is called Svarat. He is completely free, completely independent to do as he likes. And since we're minute parts and parcels of him, we have minute independence. And Prabhupada gave the example. I really relish his analogies because they make everything clear. So he said, just like a son is supposed to obey the father, but he may not do so. He may do something else. Or a servant is supposed to obey the master, and the servant has freedom. The servant may not obey the master. And he gave the example in his own experience that when he was in Allahabad, he knew one barrister who was a lawyer. Barrister is a British word for lawyer. Mr. Banerjee, who had two sons. And the eldest son also became a lawyer, as one might expect. But the younger son, he became what's called an ekawala. So in India, there's something called an ekawala that's a carriage drawn by one horse. And this younger son decided to become the driver for that one horse carriage. And Prabhupada said, means this young man fell in love with a low-class woman, and by her association, he decided to become this ekawala. And he also mentioned the Jamil, the case of a Jamil who also fell down and misused his minute independence. So it became clear at that time, under that discussion, that we are here, and we cannot blame anyone else. We ourselves must take responsibility for being in this material world and leaving that situation which is so far superior to this material world. We cannot blame, we cannot accuse, and we cannot complain, because it is our situation, the result of our decision. And this Dr. Mize, he said, it's puzzling to me that one would make such a decision. Very puzzling. And Prabhupada said that means independence. If you cannot make the wrong decision, then where is your independence? As we say, love cannot be forced. Love must be evoked. It's already there in the heart, so it's evoked. And also, making the wrong decision is, again, our choice. It cannot be forced to make the right decision. It must come from us. And Dr. Mize asked also, he said, are there still souls falling from the spiritual world? And will they continue to fall? And how many have fallen? And Prabhupada at that time said something I had never read in his books. He said 90% don't fall. And Dr. Mize said, so we are part of the 10%? And Prabhupada said, even less than that. Even less than that. So we are the minority, the vast minority here, although there's so many of us. The world seems so full of people, especially in India. But we are the minority. And Dr. Mize said, so does Krishna know that which souls will fall and which will not fall? And Prabhupada said, Krishna is omniscient. He will know. And then he gave another analogy. He said, just like the government is building a city, so they will also build a prison house. So you may go to the government and say, why are you building a prison house? There are no prisoners. But the government knows that some people will be criminal, and they will have to be put in the prison. And so ahead of time, they build a prison house. So if Prabhupada said, if the ordinary government knows, why Krishna will not know? Krishna will also know. And so here we are in this prison house of the material world. I must say that this conversation is available on the following Srila Prabhupada. This is not a plug, but it is available on the following Srila Prabhupada series. It's DVD number 9, and it's under the chapter called Conversations with Professors. So you can see it and hear it. It's very powerful. When we were traveling recently, we showed it twice, and it remains fascinating, no matter how many times you see it. So in this way, Prabhupada was explaining our situation, and he also explained that it is because of our being overwhelmed by lust and greed, tada rajas tamo bhava, that we are in this material world. He gave the example that in Paris, he personally saw in Paris, old man, 75 years old, going to the nightclub. He pays $50 just to get in, and once he's in, he pays so much more for other things. So this is lust, and even in the old age, without training, it will not go away. This lust and greed. But to become qualified to re-enter this Vaikuntha situation of having spiritual bodies, spiritual form, we must overcome these lower qualities and come at least to the platform of sattva-gund. And Prabhupada mentions, based on this verse, which is from First Canto, Second Chapter, text 19, Tada Rajas Tamo Bhava, that once one comes to this sattva-gund, then one becomes happy. That is one of the symptoms of coming to sattva-gund, that one feels happiness. And without that quality, without coming to that stage of life, then one will be constantly in distress, constantly overcome by the modes of nature, and feeling pulled, a slave of lust, a slave of greed. Very unfortunate situation. So one may ask, so here we are in this material world, entangled in so many ways, so how do we extricate ourselves and go return to our home with Krishna in Vaikuntha? And that's explained in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says in the third chapter that work done for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is work and sacrifice. And that frees one from the bondage to this material world. Work done in sacrifice for Vishnu. And then he goes on in the next chapter, which is entitled Transcendental Knowledge, the fourth chapter. And he says that that work, which transcends the modes of nature and is full of transcendental knowledge, that makes one eligible to overcome this material world and enter that spiritual kingdom. And by full absorption, he goes on to say, in transcendental knowledge, then one becomes qualified to re-enter Vaikuntha. And then at that point, he says, the consummation is absolute, and it is of the same spiritual nature. It means that once we apply ourselves to this process of bhakti yoga, then it's a process called spiritualization. Means, Prabhupada gives this analogy repeatedly, that if you take an iron rod, just like now in Mayapur there's so much construction, so there's rebar here and there. I was going for a walk and I saw so much rebar, which is nothing but an iron rod used to create strong concrete structures. But if you take that iron rod and put it into fire and let it heat up and heat up and heat up, eventually it becomes just like fire. Now you may argue, no, it's still an iron rod, but just try touching it and then speak. So actually it acts just like fire. So similarly, we can take our bodies and our activities, our senses, whatever we have available to us, and use them as sacrifice for Vishnu, for the pleasure of Vishnu, and then find ourselves spiritualize slowly but slowly but slowly. It's a process of improvement. A process of improvement. And it's a wonderful, joyful process in which one eventually sees all living entities equally, as Krishna also is equal to everyone. So one who is going on with this process of bhakti also comes to this point of seeing everyone equally as part and parcel of Krishna. A very beautiful vision. So that's one aspect, and we can understand that this situation that we're looking at now, with Jai and Vijay falling to become these personalities, Sishupal and Dantavakra, and Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, this was for a specific pastime of the Lord. The Lord wanted to fight, Prabhupada explains. So he doesn't fight with ordinary people. And he arranged this situation where the Kumaras come and they feel angry at Jai and Vijay and they curse them. And even at that point, Vishnu comes in the presence of these personalities, Jai and Vijay and the four Kumaras. And he feels that Jai and Vijay are his representatives, and their behavior as his representatives is also his behavior. So he feels responsible. And he says that he would lop off his own arm if he felt it was hostile to devotees. Krishna says he would lop off his own arm if he felt it was hostile to devotees. And he also says something truly extraordinary, more extraordinary than that. He says that everyone throughout the world who is pious worships his lotus feet, but he worships his servants. And because he worships his servants, therefore, his lotus feet are being worthy of worshiped. Because he worships his servants, therefore, his lotus feet are worthy of worship. And he says, Lakshmi Devi is attracted by his disposition and never leaves her side. Well, in this material world, she's called Chanchala. Everyone is coveting the presence of Lakshmi Devi. But she never leaves Vishnu's side, and he attributes that to his service to his servants. That is why he has this disposition that Lakshmi never leaves his side. So it's truly extraordinary how he honors his servants. He also says that the Ganges, which emanates from his lotus feet and purifies everywhere that it flows, we're so fortunate that it flows so near us sitting here. And he said, even though that Ganges from his lotus feet purifies the world, still upon his head he takes the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. Such is the mood and the quality of our Lord. Something so relishable for us. So these are one aspect, and we can understand that our fall to this material world does not compare to the fall of Jai and Vijay, where this was an arrangement by the Lord personally for his own pleasure pastimes, as Prabhupada says in this paragraph here. Any pastime conducted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is an arrangement by Yoga Maya, not Mahamaya. Therefore, it is to be understood that when Jai and Vijay descended to this material world, they came because there was something to be done for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they had a service to do and they came. In our case, it's quite different. That we came because we were forgetful of Krishna. We had other motivations other than serving Krishna. So in this regard, we can turn again to Srila Prabhupada. He gave an extraordinary, unique lecture in Tokyo in April of 1972. So that'd be 3 years before his conversation with Dr. Mayes. And he was discussing Canto 2, Chapter 9, the first verse. And there Krishna says that unless one has a relationship with the external energy, or the energy of the Lord, there is no meaning to this pure souls being and the pure consciousness being covered by matter. It is because of a covering of matter, a covering of the external energy over the pure soul and with pure consciousness, that we think that we have some relationship to matter. And in this lecture, Prabhupada explained, he gave the analogy, just like the moon is there in the sky. You can picture the full moon. And before it, a cloud is moving across it. So you may think, you may look at that and think, well, the moon is moving. The cloud is stationary and the moon is moving. But that's an illusion. Just like I had the experience several times, I was on a train that was stopped. And another train stopped right next to it. And then one train started moving, and I couldn't tell if I was in the stationary train or the moving train. It was very disoriented. So that happened in India a couple of times. I don't know why it happens here. But it was very disorienting. You're not sure who's moving. Am I still, and that's moving? Or that, you know. So in the same way, we look in the sky, and we may see this cloud that's actually moving, but think the moon is moving. So that's compared to this material nature, this material world. We think that we're this body. We think, I'm an American, I'm an old lady, I'm a woman, I'm this and that, but actually, I am the spiritual being. That is the moon. And this is just a passing cloud all those identifications are just a passing cloud that will come and go. Prabhupada, in that lecture, he also mentioned how when he was in Calcutta as a child, there's some very expert directors came. One's name was Girish Chandra, and perhaps his brother. And they trained the children to do a play of Chaitanya Leela, and they trained them so expertly that these children forgot who they were in their ordinary life, and they became that person in the play. They were completely absorbed in the individual they were playing. So much so, it was a meditation, practically you could say a samadhi for them. So much so that when they performed this play, the audience was crying. They were overwhelmed seeing how much the children were involved in Chaitanya Leela, so it practically became Chaitanya Leela there. And we had a similar experience. There was one of our god sisters, Rasa Gyaprabhu, who was an incredible actress. And when we were in the Brooklyn Temple, 439 Henry Street, we did a play called Krishna Kidnaps Rukmini, in which Rasa Gya played Rukmini. And she mentioned afterwards that she was extremely nervous. She was thinking, how can I play Rukmini? I'm just, you know, look at me, how can I do this? But she was trained in acting, and the show must go on, so the show did go on. And she actually stepped into that role so that when the curtains opened, she was sitting there meditating on Krishna, wanting Krishna to come and snatch her away. And we felt, this is Rukmini. Every motion of her eyes, every motion of her body was just like Rukmini. And afterwards, Srila Prabhupada mentioned how of all the actors and actresses, she was the best in that play. It was just remarkable, just remarkable. And she did that every time she performed. Unfortunately, she's passed away now. So in that way, Prabhupada's analogy was that in this material world, if you understand I'm a spirit soul, I'm not this body, you're not going to be very interested in what goes on in this world because you understand it has no relation to me. What relation does the sun have to the cloud that's passing in front of it? It's millions of miles. There's no relationship. So everything material, everything that we're identifying with and attached to, is going to come and go. So it has no relation to us. But by the influence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we become totally involved in playing that role and totally attached and suffer in so many ways, unfortunately. And this is our sad state in this material world. And one analogy that makes this extremely clear is that just picture you come into a room and someone is sleeping. And that person in his or her sleep is attacked by a tiger. And they're overcome with fear and they're calling out and crying. And this person is quite healthy, lying on the bed. So you know this has no meaning. All their fear, all their emotion, all their tears, it has no meaning. All they have to do is wake up and they'll see the actual situation. And that is our situation also. We think that we're fallen. Prabhupada said in this lecture, actually we're not fallen. We're not fallen. We just think we're fallen. We're part and parcel of Krishna. Where is the question of fallen? This is the cloud that's passing over us. We must disperse this cloud. And that is the beauty and the revolutionary nature of Prabhupada's teachings, to try to disperse this cloud. The impersonalist cannot reach the Vaikuntha planets to become associates of the Lord, and therefore, according to their desires, Krishna gives them Sayuja Mukti. However, since Sayuja Mukti is partial mukti, they must fall again to this material world. When it is said that the individual soul falls from Brahma Loka, this applies to the impersonalists. From authoritative sources, it is learned that Jaya and Vijaya were sent to this material world to fulfill the Lord's desire to fight. The Lord also sometimes wants to fight, but who can fight with the Lord but a very confidential devotee of the Lord? Jaya and Vijaya descended to this world to fulfill the Lord's desire. Therefore, in each of their three births, First as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, second as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and third as Sishupal and Dantavakra. The Lord personally killed them. In other words, these associates of the Lord, Jayan Vijay, descended to the material world to serve the Lord by fulfilling his desire to fight. Otherwise, as Maharaj Yudhisthira says, Ashradheya Ivabati, the statement that a servant of the Lord could fall from Vaikuntha seems unbelievable. How Jayan Vijay came to this material world is explained by Narada Muni as follows. So ordinarily, we have a little sign here that we're supposed to end now, but today is the disappearance day of Srila Madhvacharya. So I thought to honor him, such an exalted personality. We just recently went to the Chaitanya Math, personally established by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and they have these four pillars, each with one of the Acharyas, Nimbarka and Vishnu Swami, Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya. So I thought perhaps we could read just a little bit about him to remind ourselves of our great predecessor. So if you'll indulge me, we'll just read a brief bit. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 9, text 245. In his childhood, Madhvacharya was known as Vasudeva, and there are some wonderful stories surrounding him. It is said that once when his father had piled up many debts, Madhvacharya converted tamarind seeds into actual coins to pay them off. When he was 5 years old, he was offered the sacred thread. A demon named Maniman lived near his abode in the form of a snake, and at the age of 5, Madhvacharya killed that snake with the toe of his left foot. When his mother was very much disturbed, he would appear before her in one jump. He was a great scholar even in childhood, and although his father did not agree, he accepted sannyas at the age of 12. Upon receiving sannyas from Achyuta Preksha, he received the name Purna Pragya Tirtha. After traveling all over India, he finally discussed scriptures with Vidyashankara, the exalted leader of the Sringera Math. Vidyashankara was actually diminished in the presence of Madhvacharya. And then there's more, but I'll just read the end here. It was reputed that there was no limit to the bodily strength of Purnapragya Madhvacharya. There was a person named Kalanjara who was famed for possessing the strength of 30 men. Madhvacharya placed the big toe of his foot upon the ground and asked the man to separate it from the ground. But the great strong man could not do so even after great effort. Srila Madhvacharya passed from this material world at the age of 80 while writing a commentary in the Aitareya Upanishad. For further information about Madhvacharya, one should read the Madhva Vijay by Narayan Acharya. So perhaps there's some thoughts about these various points. We have 10 minutes. As Vaisheshika Prabhu says, we ask for reflections, which are different from questions. Questions have a question mark, and reflections are... Yes, Prabhu. It was near the window? Near the window there. Oh, all right. Mike is coming.
Is Krishna the supreme nepotist or cronist? Is that right to see Krishna in that way?
Why would you see Krishna in that way?
Well, he favors his devotees.
Sorry?
His friends. He favors his devotees, his friends.
He reciprocates. not favors, but he reciprocates. As we surrender unto him, he rewards us accordingly, he says. So it is very much reciprocal. And as we turn away from him, so he also turns away from us. Prabhupada, in the garden in Los Angeles, he was talking to some scholars, and he was saying, if you don't believe in Krishna, Krishna will come to you as death. Mrityu sarva haras chaham. Mrityu means death. Sarva haras, all devouring. Chaham, I am that. So don't believe in Krishna. That is fine. He will take away your bank balance. He will take away your prestigious position. He will take away your life heirs. And that is Krishna. God will come to you as death. So he is reciprocating. And he comes to his devotees in just the perfect way that they love him. If they love him as a parent, if they love him as a lover, if they love him as a servant or a friend, he reciprocates that way.
I'm hoping you can resolve a paradox. Speaking of paradoxes, in the beginning you mentioned Prabhupada telling Professor Mize that we've fallen because we misused our independence. And then just toward the end you said, actually we didn't fall, or we're not really fallen because we're spirit, we're not matter, we're just asleep in that tiger dream. So please resolve these two.
Yeah. We think we've fallen, but we actually have not fallen, according to Srila Prabhupada. How can we fall? We're part and parcel of Krishna. This is Krishna's energy. Everything you see is Krishna's energy. It's our covering that we separate it from Krishna. Bina, right? Bina apaka. So then we see, oh, here's earth, here's water, here's fire. Just like Maharaj Pariksit, one of his questions in the prayers by the personified Vedas, he said that my tongue is material, it's made of earth, and the sound vibrations that it creates are material, and it's going through the air, which is material, earth, water, fire, air, and it's coming to the ear, somebody's ear, that's also material. So where is the question of transcendence? Everything is material. How are we going to transcend? This is a problem, right? But that comes that this iron rod is actually not material. It's our vision that is creating that material covering. So we're thinking, I am this body. We're not this body. We're Krishna's servants. We're Krishna's parts. And this is all Krishna's energy. So where is the fallen? That was Prabhupada's point in this remarkable lecture in Tokyo. We are not fallen. It's nonsense. Simply nonsense. I am this. I am that. This is mine.
So we're never not part of Krishna, but we can misuse our independence. So that is not a fallen act, to misuse the independence?
That's a fallen act, but our identity is spiritual.
Okay. Right. So it's a different way of talking about the same thing, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Oh, I had one more related question. Sometimes a question comes up that, and we say this is our standard answer to why we have this independence that we could possibly misuse. Because without that minute independence, there's no question of love. Love has to be freely offered. So that's the question of, that's the situation of the jiva. We're minute, so we have this minute independence which we can misuse. But it seems like there are some beings who love Krishna, and there's no possibility of their misusing the independence. That's the, you know, the shakti, the internal. So what's the use of my independence? We say we need the independence to love Krishna or not. But then do we really need that? What's the use of the jiva's independence? It seems like
without independence there's no love. You cannot have love without independence.
Right, but it seems like, then why am I not shakti? What's the answer to that? You know, it seems unfair that I've been, constitutionally I'm a jiva, why couldn't I constitutionally be someone who could love Krishna and never misuse my independence?
There's no unfairness in Krishna's creation.
Can you say anything more about that?
We are what we are. What do we have to argue about what we are, or lament that we're this but we're not that?
Yeah,
we are part of Krishna. What a glorious, glorious thing. The Prabhupada writes in one purport, the soul is 10,000 more times more dazzling than the sun. Each of us is 10,000 times more dazzling than the sun. What do you want more? We're part of Krishna. You know, he's eternal, he's full of knowledge, full of bliss, has this wonderful form, he's reciprocating with us. Why be dissatisfied? We're not that. We're not Shakti.
So instead of complaining, we can just say, finally, why not just use the independence properly? Instead of complaining about the fact that we have independence, just use it properly.
Complaining does not become the soul, or blaming, or accusing. These are shameful, shameful activities.
Thank you.
So I think we had one on the ladies' side. Perhaps we have time for one more. Now we did ask for reflections and thoughts.
Thank you very much for that wonderful class. I just have some comments and thoughts. First about nepotism and cronism. I was thinking that example is not so... one can't accuse Krishna of nepotism because that means a person who does nepotism is choosing a person who's not qualified. Whereas you just gave in your class, you were given an example of how Krishna's lotus feet are worthy of worship because he worships his devotees. So obviously the devotees are very, very qualified and it's totally appropriate for him to be partial. And I was also thinking, as God, he is impartial. As Paramatma, he's impartial. He's impartially partial because he gives everyone a chance to turn to him and serve him. But as Bhagavan, he is partial, and that shows personality. Mm. Only a person is able to reciprocate. So it's glorious. It's actually considered to be an ornament. And... we see that as people, you know, Prabhupada gives the example that you might love all children, but you're more inclined towards your own child. So that actually shows personality. And anyway, thank you very much for your wonderful class.
Thank you. Okay, one more. This will be the last one.
Hare Krishna. Thanks for your class, Mama.
Hare Krishna.
Mine's a reflection also. And since we've been talking about the issue of fallen and not fallen and independence and misuse of independence for a few days now, it's a recollection of something that Srila Prabhupada said when I was there at the Bhaktivedanta Manor in 1973, shortly after Prabhupada installed Radha Gokulananda. He'd given a lecture, and at the end of the lecture came the questions and answers. And someone from the audience, his question was, Srila Prabhupada, is it possible for a pure devotee to ever forget Krishna? That was the question. And I was right at the front. And Prabhupada closed his eyes. And when he opened his eyes, he looked back at the person who asked the question. And then he looked at Radha Gokulananda and he said, every day I pray to Krishna, please, don't let me fall down. And I was overwhelmed, and I still am, that Srila Prabhupada said that. That's my reflection.
Thank you. Thank you all very much for your attention. All glories to His divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.